Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So with our special guest co-host Tim Swartz and our guest of the week, Steve Ward, before we started this episode of the PowerCast, we were talking briefly, kind of like Laugh After Death. Now, I'm going to give you a spoiler here. And if you have not seen or heard about the last James Bond movie, No Time to Die, the spoiler, we want you to turn down your radio or your iPhone or your Galaxy phone to zero for about 20 seconds when I say this. Okay, are you ready? All right, the spoiler. At the end of the latest James Bond film, the last one in which Daniel Craig appears as Bond, James Bond, in the end, he dies or appears to die.
No, I didn't know that. Oh.
Sorry, folks. Obviously, we've seen people die before, and they come back. This echoes back to the film On Her Majesty's Secret Service, if you recall. That's where George Lazenby, an Australian actor, played Bond for one time. His co-star was Diana Rigg, just off from The Avengers, where she played Emma Peel. And she marries Bond, but is killed off by Blofeld in the final scene. Bond says, we've got all the time in the world. And the closing theme of No Time to Die is the same song from Louis Armstrong, We've Got All the Time in the World. Okay. So the key here, of course, you wonder, if you kill off your lead character, how do you bring him back? Now, in Batman v Superman, they killed off Superman. But being a comic book story, they were able to bring back Superman. Now, maybe in the same way that new actors play James Bond all the time, they could bring back James Bond after offing him. But in one of the novels, was it, they actually did kill him off for a while, didn't they?
Well, I think he was in You Only Live Twice. He was in a confrontation with Blofeld. I think there was a huge explosion, and he's lost his memory. The last scene is where he's looking through his wallet or whatever, and he sees his identification card, but he can't quite remember who this guy is, and so he's going to think about it tomorrow. But, of course, in the – what was the next one? The Man with a Golden Gun.
The next one was The Man with the Golden Gun?
The Man with the Golden Gun, yeah. That was the last one, I think, that he wrote. And Bond comes back, and he has been turned into sort of a Manchurian candidate, I think. I don't remember it too well, but he tries to kill one of the good guys before he regains his composure. So, but it's been a long time since I've read them.
I read several of the Bond novels. And the problem was then I go to the movies, and I watch the movie. And the movies, beginning with Dr. No, which kind of had part of the novel in it, and continuing, as the movies progressed, about all they had that resembled the novel was the title and a few plot elements. Everything right. else the screenwriters added.
Yes, that's true. And for a while, they seemed to follow the stories. Now, I read somewhere that Ian Fleming wanted them to, after he died, to go their own way and make up their own plots, which doesn't sound right, but I read that somewhere. But it did seem to fit because every Bond film then had something to do with outer space and rockets capturing other rockets and death rays coming out of the sky and so forth, which was quite a departure from some of the original novels.
But if you look at the basic plot with Dr. No and No Time to Die, you have a mad scientist who has some kind of world-shattering weapon. Bond finds him with his girlfriend, in the case Bond's wife in No Time to Die, on an island, and at the end of the film, the island is destroyed. So in a very fundamental way, the plot of No Time to Die kind of calls back Dr. No.
Right.
We're not talking about James Bond here. We're talking about killing off main characters. Certainly in Batman v Superman, they killed off Superman, but found a way to resurrect him. And as you know from a comic book, it's easy to bring back a character. With Doctor Who, he or she is regenerated after being killed off. That's time for the next actor to take the role. So, of course, the current Doctor Who, Jodie Whittaker, will soon be replaced. Or maybe they've done that already. I don't know. I haven't watched the series for this year. But I don't know why we're talking to Steve Ward about death. I think we should talk more about high strangeness, which is something you very heavily focus on. Steve, how did you get involved in searching for the unknown?
Well, I guess, unlike some people, a lot of people that get into this have had an amazing experience. They've seen a strange light in the sky or had some kind of a close encounter. Maybe they grew up in a haunted house. I was more of a science fiction buff, and I even had a space map, a solar system map, long before they demoted Pluto to obscurity. And I think my interest started with I was introduced to the books of Frank Edwards. Of course, he wrote those great anthologies in the old days, like Stranger Than Science, Strangest of All, and some of the classic UFO cases, like the Flatwoods Monster, the Kelly Hopkinsville Goblins. I read there from Frank Edwards. In March of 1966, I grew up just north of Detroit in Michigan. And, that, of course, there was a huge wave. It wasn't just in Michigan, but throughout the Midwest, they had a huge wave of flying saucer reports. And we had, some very, competent witnesses, a lot of police officers and so forth. There was even a landing on the Frank Manor Farm, which was in Dexter. Dexter, Ann Arbor, Hillsdale, these were places not far from me. And while I was in junior high at the time and didn't have any wheels to go play UFO investigator, it was sort of like having the invading alien hordes landing in your backyard. So that was very cool. And, of course, eventually we started a high school UFO club and so forth. But just a few months after that, November of 1966, the first major flyover of the Mothman took place, even before they actually gave him a name. And so I think that's really what triggered it. And then, you know, I started actually going to my local library, finding any kind of books I could on UFOs, especially UFOs. I wasn't terribly interested in ghosts or anything like that at the time. And there wasn't too much being reported about Bigfoot, although I remember a chapter in one of Frank Edwards' books. I think it was something like The Monster Apes of Oregon. That may have been the first place I ever read about Bigfoot. So it was that early exposure to some of the literature and actually having a wave of interesting sightings going on right in my backyard.
Well, of course, the Michigan cases led to the congressional hearings because yes. One of them occurred in the district that was represented by Congressman Gerald Ford.
Yes, he kind of lit a fire under everybody. I remember, I think it was in, you know, Jacques Vallée has written these great memoirs, journals, I should say, called Forbidden Science, and each one covers a decade, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s so far. Well, he talks about how, of course, he was in contact with Hynek. They were friends and colleagues at the time. Hynek apparently contacted Blue Book because he was associated with Blue Book at the time and said, you know, there's all these sightings going on in Michigan. Would you like me to go there? And it was, no, don't worry about it. We haven't had any, you know, civilians report to us, so we're just going to let it go. Well, Gerald Ford wanted to know what the heck was going on and why the government wasn't doing something about it. So the next day, according to Vallée, Hynek was on a plane to Michigan, and that started the, I guess you could call it the swamp gas fiasco.
Or is the swamp gas tour.
Yes.
As we might call it. And it's interesting to think that this congressman is going to become the accidental vice president in the following decade, and then the president of the United States. Our guest is Stephen Ward, joining us for the first time, telling us about his background in UFO research, about the sightings in Michigan that led to congressional hearings. Our guest co-host is Tim Swartz. You're in
the Paracast.
listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best, deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We continue with Stephen Ward. Steve, you were telling us about what happened and began to describe what I call the Swamp Gas Tour. And I think it took a long time for Dr. Hynek to live that one down. Go on.
Yes. Valet does a good job of saying what happened. But I actually, 10 years later, I was able to attend the MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, symposium in Ann Arbor, Michigan. This was really amazing because while I did have wheels at that time, I didn't have a lot of money and any kind of a per diem to actually go traipsing all over the world. So Ann Arbor was just a stone's throw from where I lived. There was a great symposium. You had Dr. Hynek. You had Ray Stanford was there. Jerome Clark was in speaking for Jacques Vallée. So Dr. Hynek told us in his own words, he had a great speech called Swamp Gas Plus 10 and Counting. So he told us what happened. And he was still, of course, he was tied to Project Blue Book. But by this time, he was realizing that there was really something very substantive to this and that a lot of the people were very credible. So what he said was, and I actually, somewhere I have the recording, I was there with my cassette recorder and I transferred some of this over to CD. But what he actually said was that he thought that some of the reports, possibly in the ones in Hillsdale, might be due to swamp gas. Well, of course, that's all the press needed. The mystery was solved. UFOs were swamp gas. But it was great to see him speak. There was a lot of self-depreciating humor there. He actually showed us these great cartoons that came out at the time. You know, you'd see a bunch of little green men who have just landed in their flying saucer. They have these horrible weapons of mass destruction, and they've accosted some human on the street, and they said something like, take us to the one that called us swamp gas. Yeah. But it was really great to see Hynek as one of the good guys now. He was separated for a while from Project Blue Book and had started the Center for UFO Studies in Evanston, Illinois. So that was just a fantastic conference and great to finally actually talk to some of these people. I remember talking to James Webb, who wrote 1973, Year of the Humanoid. Leader of the Humanoids. And, boy, I was just in seventh heaven during that symposium.
Yeah, I remember Dr. Hynek slightly because I met him a couple of times. I interviewed him once. Unfortunately, I do not have the recording anymore. If I did, you'd hear it, folks. And he was just such a nice guy. Really, really gentle spirit. Nothing like the guy on that Project Blue Book TV show, which had only the vaguest resemblance to the real Dr. Hynek. He was not an action hero. But let's go back to the other event here, because you raise the specter, here we go to Bond again, specter, but not that kind of specter, the specter of Mothman. You heard about Mothman, you were interested, tell me more.
Well, it was this first sighting. I guess it wasn't actually the first, but the one where the two couples, the Scarabarius and the Mallets, were in the TNT area. Now, the TNT area is north of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and Point Pleasant lies right on the Ohio River in the Ohio Valley. The TNT area was a place where they actually created munitions for the World War II effort. And if you look at the old black and white photographs, you'll see this great complex of all these buildings, which were pretty much demolished. Back in at that time period, November 15th, 1966, the old North Power Plant, the ruin, was still standing there. And these two married couples, the Scarabarius and the Mallets, were cruising around this TNT area. Now this area is called the McClintock Wildlife Area. But even back in the 60s, it was very desolate. If you go there nowadays, it's a perfect setting for a horror movie, even in the daytime. And at night, it's really creepy. Well, they came across this 6 or 7 foot humanoid-like being with wings and piercing red glowing eyes, and it scared the heck out of them. They raced south down Route 62 into Point Pleasant, and this thing apparently chased after them for a while. Well, that was the first big sighting. This thing hit the wire services, I guess, all over the world. That's why I saw it as a kid in junior high in Michigan. And then the sightings kept gathering after that. And, of course, eventually John Keel got involved and started doing research there. Now, his book, The Mothman Prophecies, wasn't published till about 10 years later. So I would hear, you know, he would write an article now and then, and he covered some of the Mothman experience in Strange Creatures from Time and Space, which I think is now called The Guide to Mysterious Beings. And so I started following Keel and other researchers. And I even actually, you know, I you good guys remember back in the old days, UHF channels. Well, I got a black and white TV set from my grandparents, and it was blessed to have these bizarre channels, you know, Channel 50 or whatever. Well, I was getting in all these great talk shows from New York City. So I would hear shows like Les Crane, Joe Pyne, and Alan Burke. Well, one day on Alan Burke, he had Ivan Sanderson on, the great British naturalist who was a friend and colleague of John Keel. Well, John Keel was in the audience, and he would come up like they would have that speaker like they do now where the audience members could come up and talk. And they, I think the topic that night was the Bermuda Triangle. So back then, in combination with the interest in the Mothman, UFOs, and starting to read some of Keel's stuff, that kind of pulled me into the whole area of the Mothman. And then in 76, I think it was, when I had already read a couple other books by Keel, but I was waiting breathlessly for the Mothman Prophecies hardcover. Didn't sell very well, but I was one of the first ones out there to buy that thing in hardcover with the old dust jacket. And the next year, I took a trip down to Point Pleasant just to kind of see what everything looked like.
We're going to go on that visit with Steve in a second, just to mention that I think the Mothman Prophecies was probably, in a way, one of the biggest paydays for John Keel because he sold the rights to a movie. Now, the movie wasn't quite the story, although maybe it was because it captured it in a more paranormal way, and maybe you didn't get that impression from the book quite as much. But that enabled John Keel to buy a car, and he kept going for a few years, and then, of course, everything petered out. But that's not the story, unfortunately. We would have loved to have interviewed John Keel, but by the time he was at a point where we had the radio show going, he was rather old and irascible. He was always irascible, but he was old and irascible. And when my former co-host called John Keel, his first comment was, "Who gave you my phone number?" It was Tim Beckley, but, you know, it doesn't matter. And we really wanted him on. It would have been great to have had him on because I knew John Keel on and off for a number of years. Unfortunately, it was never to be. Okay, so we're talking here about your studies of Mothman. The book The Mothman Prophecies comes out from John Keel. And in our next segment, we're going to talk about what did you do next. Steve Ward is our guest. Tim Swartz, our special guest co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The Supreme Court is considering the Biden administration's vaccine mandate on large employers. During oral arguments about the mandate, Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor stated, "We have over 100,000 children, which we've never had before, in serious condition, many on ventilators, from COVID-19. In reality, there are about 4,000 children in hospitals from coronavirus. Flight delays and cancellations are continuing to plague travelers over a week into 2022. Total cancellations topping 3,000 Saturday, with 1,100 within, into, or out of the United States. Airports along the East Coast are bearing the brunt of the problems as heavy snowfall moved through the area. And you're listening to USA Radio News. The Department of Housing and Urban Development is withholding nearly $2 billion in Hurricane Harvey relief aid earmarked for Texas. Federal agencies saying the state has failed to send in paperwork detailing how the funds will be spent. 4 years after Congress approved over $4 billion in aid, nearly half remains unallocated. An annual event is set to take place later in January.
March for Life organizers said the event will proceed as planned. The 49th Annual March for Life will take place days after the D.C. vaccination mandate kicks in. The March for Life will modify some of its indoor events due to the new COVID-19 regulations. The March for Life, set for January 21st, is a massive pro-life demonstration that's followed the anniversary of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision, which legalized abortion nationwide in 1973. In the USA Radio News Midwest Bureau, I'm Katie Lewis.
This is USA Radio News.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
Steve, the book came out. Tell us more.
Well, I was fascinated by the book, and we've all read books of some description where we wanted to go to the place that it talked about. Now, especially Point Pleasant, West Virginia, had become kind of a magical place. There were all kinds of things that happened there. Mary Heyer, who was the newspaper reporter that became a friend and colleague of John Teal, chronicled a lot of these events. UFOs were being sighted all the time. There were Men in Black encounters and so forth. The fascinating book. But before I get to what I did, it's very interesting. Richard Haddam is the man that wrote the screenplay to The Mothman Prophecies. And I guess from what I understand from Brent Rains, who wrote a book on John Teal, Teal had resisted selling the rights for a long time. But when he read Richard Haddam's screenplay, he thought, it finally touched on some of the ideas, you know, even though they updated the time period, they made his character married and so forth. It wasn't a documentary. It wasn't a carbon copy of the book. But Teal was almost giddy, apparently, with what he saw in that screenplay. The other thing is, I found out, was that half of the manuscript of the Mothman Prophecies was cut out and landed on the cutting room floor. Fortunately, some of that survived in the Eighth Tower. John Teal also told Brent Rains that if he had written down everything that had happened during that time period, it could have easily filled 6 books. But, of course, I knew nothing about this when I took my pilgrimage down there. I had been visiting some friends in the summer south of Buffalo. And so I decided that I was going to head down to Point Pleasant and just take a look at this area myself. And so I went down there, got there late one night, and stumbled onto the Lowe Hotel, which is an old classic hotel, and stayed there that night. And I had somehow a map of the TNT area, so I kind of knew where to go. Back then, you could actually drive into the TNT area, kind of like the Scarberries and the Mallets did during that first encounter. But now you can't. You can walk back to where all these concrete igloos are. These are the bunkers where they stored the munitions during World War II, and they're all covered with foliage and so forth. They were meant to hide the explosives from the enemy should they fly over. Well, wasn't too worried about the enemy flying over at that point. Now my memories are very vague. I wish I had taken more photographs at the time, but I did find the old North power plant, which was still standing then. They demolished it back in the 90s, I believe. So I found it. I started walking out there with my camera. A gentleman in a hard hat came out and met me halfway and asked me what was I doing there. And I explained what I was doing there. And he kind of rolled his eyes and he says, "I remember." Now, the thing is, this is only 10 years after the bridge collapse, because that culminated at the end of most of these sightings. The last thing I was going to do is go around town asking people if they saw the Mothman. So I did not want to run into somebody that lost a family member or a friend on the bridge that night. Anyway, his only concern was he allowed me to go in the power plant and take pictures. He just wanted to make sure I didn't kill myself. I guess kids would go out there, they'd climb on the building, go inside, and they'd fall, and there'd be injuries. And even back then, he said they were planning on demolishing it because it was such a hazard. And I took some great photographs of that building, which I've just, in the last couple of weeks, I've been up in the attic trying to find them. You'll be the first to know if I do find them. That was, for me, that was just an amazing trip. I remember having a breakfast in town, and like I say, if I had the presence of mind, I would have shot dozens of rolls of film there so that I could have remembered clearly what it was like. But this is back in 77, so this goes back a few years. And then my next visit was 2006 to my first Mothman Festival.
Let me ask you a question here. Are they still running Mothman festivals there?
Yes. The last couple of years were canceled for obvious reasons.
Sure.
But I started as a carefree visitor in 2006, buying everything with Mothman stamped on it. This is a great place to go, by the way. Even off-season, even when they're not, the festival occurs normally every third week in September. Jeff Wamsley and Carolyn Harris. Carolyn is no longer with us, but they were the co-founders of the festival back about 2001, and it's grown and grown. I mean, the last few times you had something like 10,000-12,000 people there. It's in the open air. The speakers go for 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, down at the State Theater. It's right on the Ohio River. There's a beautiful amphitheater there. The Mothman, the majestic Mothman statue is right there in town, right next to the Mothman Museum. Jeff Wamsley is also the curator of that museum, and they have done a phenomenal job in putting that together. There's nothing cheap or haphazard about it. He's got all kinds of articles and about whether you look at it as history or folklore, he's got it all covered. He's got memorabilia from the film. He even has John Keel's white suit in a glass case, which is awesome. And they also have a section where you can buy souvenirs, T-shirts, and that sort of thing. It's all a very high-quality merchandise. They've got a bookshelf, and it's just a phenomenal place to go. And during the festival, when I went there in 2006, I just had a wide grin on my face because you're there with like-minded people you can actually talk to about these things and not, you know, you can actually admit that you research the paranormal or the unknown. And over the years, I've been able to speak to, I became friends with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who is another a great mind that we lost. Became friends with Stan Gordon. He was just on my show recently. And so many of the people, Nick Redfern and all these people are so approachable. And it's just a phenomenal experience. As the years went by, I became kind of absorbed into the festival because now I often will introduce the speakers. I help out ahead of time setting up things in the TNT area. We set it up a little bit like a Halloween hayride because Saturday night there are three tractors that pull these wagons behind them, and it will take you through the dreaded TNT area in the dead of night with a guaranteed flyover of the Mothman. Maybe not the Mothman, but a reasonable facsimile.
And hey, let me, before to get into the sales pitches for the Mothman Festival. Obviously, they found a way to turn this into a tourist attraction, just as they did in Roswell, New Mexico, for that particular case. What have we learned about Mothman, though, from the original event, from all the time you spent talking to people? Let's focus more on not just the festival, and we hope it does well, and we hope that as we, again, talking about hope, get past the pandemic or it becomes less injurious to us, they could have festivals like this more regularly. What do we know about Mothman that relates, if any way, to the paranormal?
Well, that kind of, for me, it goes back to my frame of mind in the 1960s. I thought we were dealing with extraterrestrial visitors landing on Earth in their egg-shaped craft, taking soil samples, and sometimes taking us for an unscheduled medical examination. Now, as time went on, I think the book that really actually turned my head was Kiel's Operation Trojan Horse, which I read sometime before the Mothman prophecies. And that's where Kiel, of course, makes a case that many of these things seem to be connected. And I was barely recovering from that, and I read Jacques Vallée's Passport to Magonia. So that put me, those two researchers, looking at this thing as possibly something beyond nuts and bolts or merely flesh and blood entities, put me on a different track. So I began to believe that we had to really listen to what people had been reporting. What is their experience? Kind of try to pull back our preconceived ideas and actually listen to the experiencers. Of course, we're always trying to assess the credibility of people. But so here, my point is this.
Let's make the point in our next segment, okay? We'll make that point in the next segment with Stephen and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire fireplace grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight? At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutralizes the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hey folks, Tom D for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, ghosts, zombies, UFOs, crop circles, and more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people who seek a little more than the other dating services offer. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and you want to connect with others, use the code George for a substantial discount. So many people want to share their experiences with the paranormal, the afterlife, the unusual, and this is the place to meet and share common interests with those of like minds. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. That's ParanormalDate.com. Use the code word George and start meeting others. Get going now and connect with someone you like.
Hi, this is Joshua P. Warren, author of The Poor Man's Paranormal, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, of course, here, reading Passport to Magonia by Jacques Vallée, reading Operation Trojan Horse by John Keel, setting a frame of mind about what might be going on here, and now we're evaluating what was going on and the experiencers involved in Mothman. Not just people seeing something, but a lot more. Steve Ward, go on.
Well, when you start to gather the reports together, Keel talked to about a little over 100 people that year and what they saw. Most of them described essentially the same thing. Not everybody. Most of them described something about 6-7 feet tall, man-like, about a 10-foot wingspan, red glowing eyes, dark grayish in color, all kinds of anomalies. If we are trying to think of this thing as some kind of a hidden creature, it didn't always flap its wings. Its wingspan was 10 feet, which may not have been enough to actually lift something that size anyway in a biological sense. And also, some witnesses said it didn't actually flap its wings. It would put its wings behind it and sometimes take off straight like a helicopter. So Keel did seem to find some kind of weird footprints near the TNT power plant that may have been associated with Mothman. But there were some aspects that seemed where you could say, well, it's more like an apparition. And others would say, well, no, it's a little bit more like an unknown animal. But then Keel also received some reports of people that were close to it that heard something like a humming sound or a mechanical sound, maybe implying it was some kind of a drone. So when people ask me, what was the Mothman? I say, well, it was a paradox. If you listen to the reports, it doesn't seem to make sense in the way that we understand physics and biology. I think we can reject some ideas. There are, I still hear people think that, well, the TNT area, it was an area that was polluted. They did do a big cleanup in the 90s, and it's true. Many think that it's some kind of a mutant or hybrid. And I would say, well, from what we know of mutations, radiation and chemical mutations, I don't think you're going to get some kind of a perfect hybrid that can function like a humanoid and fly like a bird. A mutation, I think, would be much different and maybe not even functional. And And then, you know, people say, well, it was an ET. Well, I guess it was seen a couple times and associated with, certain lights in the sky, but I'm not sure that that makes sense either. So when people ask me what the Mothman was, John Keel didn't really know either. We really don't know, I wouldn't reject some of these reports simply because they don't all fit together. So it still is a mystery. But then if we look at other cryptids, there are some similarities, the red glowing eyes and so forth. So again, it still is a mystery, but it's important. It's so important with not just the Mothman, but with all these things we get into, to listen to the reports that what people actually experience and try to derive some sense of it from that point.
Well, the thing about Mothman is that it has legs. And I'm not talking about its physical legs. I'm talking about how many years has it been since, 1966, 67, 68, when all of this was going on in Point Pleasant. Yet here we are still talking about Mothman. It hasn't gone away. It's been seen in other places.
Well, it's one of these classic high strangeness areas, or call it a vortex, portal, window area, as Keel did. Those are the areas that fascinate me. Oftentimes there seems to be some sort of a cryptid that might be predominant in that area, along with strange aerial phenomena and even animal mutilations, time loss, and that sort of thing. But no, it hasn't. But the thing is that we have to be a little careful. A lot of times there'll be some kind of a winged creature sighted, and people will say, oh, the Mothman's back. Well, if you really look at some of these reports, it's very seldom do you get something that looked exactly like this thing did. I mean, it almost looked like it didn't have a head. The eyes were sort of sunken down in its chest area, or so it seemed. The only other sighting that I can think of that looked a lot like the Mothman was one that took place almost exactly 3 years earlier in Kent, England. It's 3 years earlier than November 15th, 1966. It was November 14th, I think, 63 in Kent, England. And a group of teenagers were coming back from a dance. They saw this strange light land behind a group of trees, and then this Mothman-like creature appeared, and it kind of shuffled like the other Mothman did in the TNT area. It didn't have red glowing eyes, but it appeared to them that it may not have had a head at all. But it was very, very similar in structure. Now we get a lot of other winged creatures. We had the Houston man bat in the 50s. We had the Houston Batman. Then we had the Wisconsin man bat, maybe 10 or 15 years ago. Linda Godfrey covered that one. And that thing looked like a big, kind of a big, ugly bat that a man and his son encountered in their car. It came up to the windshield and fluttered away. And they both had very, very negative reactions from it. I mean, physical sickness from it, nausea and so forth. So I think maybe we should put them in kind of the category of winged creatures or winged apparitions. I like the term the phantom menagerie. You guys, I'm sure, are familiar with Forbidden Planet and remember the idea of monsters from the id. It almost seems to me like sometimes these things are just coming out of the subconscious and manifesting, because we get such a variety. You know, we seldom get, when we look at cryptids, entities that land in UFOs, even the structures, the craft themselves, there doesn't seem to be ones that are specifically the same or exactly the same. It seems like there's quite a variety of all these things.
Parenthetically, before Tim drops in with a question, I'll just say about Forbidden Planet, you watch that film, watch Leslie Nielsen before he became funny, and imagine if William Shatner watched Forbidden Planet before he became Captain Kirk. Tim?
Oh, I love Forbidden Planet, by the way.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite movies, so way ahead of its time. But I was going to ask you, you brought up the red eyes. Now, that's something that we see in a lot of cryptid cases, not just, winged entities, but just, all kinds of bizarre types of creatures. And John Keel himself speculated that perhaps there's nothing behind the red eyes. There's just the red eyes, and that then, you know, our conscious or subconscious, whatever, kind of then creates a creature behind it. I mean, what's your musing on this, on the whole red eye phenomenon? I mean, gosh, you could write an entire book just on red-eyed entities.
Yes. I know Keel talked about, now, of course, his thinking wasn't static. And, you know, he opposed many ideas. But one of them was that the aspect of these experiences that were objectively real were the strange lights, or, like you said, the eyes. And that people were being programmed. Some people would see a shambling hairy biped. Others might see a giant triangle in the sky. But so he would question as to whether or not some of the things were physically real. He used terms like paranormal mimicry. My favorite word that he used was transmogrification. And the only other place I've ever heard that, I think, is in the Calvin and Hobbes comic strip, when Calvin pulls out his transmogrifier. But it may be that, I don't think this is the complete answer, but it may be that some of these apparitions, some of these creatures are perhaps co-created, or we do determine its shape or appearance based on the, call it the collective consciousness or what have you. Some aspects of these beings seem to be very elusive and very, very non-physical, very non-stable. And so, but that doesn't seem to, there's definitely a physicality about so many of these things. They leave footprints. Sometimes they leave hair samples. People have been in physical contact with them. It is interesting that a lot of Bigfoot creatures, Mothman, the dogmen, some of the dogmen, these upright canids, and other, you get some of these one-off creatures too with glowing eyes.
More glowing eyes coming up. Stephen, Tim, and Gene, glowing eyes. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your Social Security number or other personal information and tell you that your Social Security number had been used in connection with the crime? Did you feel worried that your Social Security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at oig.ssa.gov.